You're listening to From the Closet with Dave and Rick.
How you doing?
Hey, Rick, what's happening? Happy Saturday to you.
It's been a great Saturday so far. You are a man, though, with some news to share, are you not? I did not prep you for this question.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I got a job.
Yeah.
Doing voiceover stuff.
Yeah.
With a company in Cincinnati. They're called killerspots.com. But it should be cool. We'll see what happens.
It.
You know, I'm on the roster, so to say. So I don't know when they'll call me, but I'm there. So yeah. That was pretty
amazing.
Fun. I was kind of excited yesterday. So
yeah. I'm very excited. That did not come out the way I meant. I am very excited for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And my audio this week doesn't sound like total trash because of a new audio interface courtesy of you. So thank you again for that nice little care package in the mail.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Yeah.
My pleasure. You know, anything to make you sound better. I mean,
well, we got to improve something.
That sounded totally wrong.
We got to improve something about me. It's not going to be my looks at all.
So, yeah, we're there. So, what are we talking about this week?
Well, a little bit of background. This person is our first international guest.
Oh.
He hails from the United Kingdom.
Oh, across the big pond.
Of course, yes.
That's probably not the best thing to do.
Should not talk like
we should.
Also British.
Yeah, no. We shouldn't do impressions.
We should not. I mean, what's your impression on that? right. I'd like to just bring him in right now in the waiting room. We can talk a little bit more.
Absolutely. Let's meet this dude.
Let's bring in Mr. Sam Burns entering the meeting right now. You are on From the Closet.
Well, hey there.
Is he there? Hello.
He says he's connecting to audio. So, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Burns.
Hi, guys.
Sam Burns. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
You can hear me?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right. Hi, Dave. Nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you, Sam.
So, Sam, I was just telling Dave here a little bit about how we came to be friends. A little bit of backstory. My daughter found some videos that Sam had made on YouTube. I had actually found them, and she loves these videos. He is the conductor of the Bristol Man's Chorus. Did I say that right, Sam? It's Bristol Man Chorus or Bristol Man's
Chorus? Yes, absolutely. You're like man cave, man looking, man chorus.
You know. Yeah, I love it. We're in our man caves, our man caves.
Absolutely.
Closet,
Sam, yeah. I got to tell you, I love your booth this morning.
Thank you.
You know, it is quite funny because some people do record in their cars because of the soundproofing. So
sure. Where we're living at the moment is just a crazy ancient barn in Normandy, just a sort of massive stone building. It's kind of all one room, and there's still two kids with us, and so everywhere is incredibly noisy. So this is a lovely... I'm in the middle of a beautiful Normandy garden in my quite scruffy old van, but it's a safe place, I feel.
It's a safe place. I'm glad it's safe for you, Sam. That's really great. I mean, I love it because just the way you described it, and then, you know, you being our first international guest, you know, the accent is amazing, and it should bring in some listeners, so which is great. You know, Richard and I promise not to do our terrible English accents. So
we sometimes do that because we love Monty Python and we just kind of break into character, you know. At least I think he likes Monty Python.
Python.
Oh, see, there it is.
That's why we don't do this. It's Python.
Us ignorant Americans.
Yes. Monty Python, darling. Yes. Well, loving your accents too, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I find this gentleman on YouTube months later, like a couple of weeks ago, actually. My oldest daughter, Rosalyn, who is 5 years old, accidentally found some things on YouTube she should not have found. And that's our fault as bad parents. We're like, hey, here's the Xfinity remote. Go ahead and talk into it and say YouTube, and then you will have the shows you want. And so she went down a nasty rabbit hole, unfortunately, and started having some nightmares. And so one thing that comforted her was watching Mr. Burns's choir. And so I thought, well, what if I could reach out to this guy? And it was a long shot. I thought, this guy is her biggest celebrity in her entire world. And she loves this guy. She calls him the funny guy. She calls him the funny guy. And
he's not the only one.
Well, you're in good company today then.
Right.
And so like I heard back from his wife, who is the manager, correct? Yes. And then she immediately put me in touch. And I was thinking, you know, maybe he could just say a quick little message to for night, like a good night message. And he actually, he not only did that, he gave us like five different ones. And he also gave us a lullaby that he wrote from scratch.
Oh my gosh.
Like right there. Yeah. And it's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. And we sing it to Roslyn nightly now. And she requests it. She wants the video, and of course she still wants the pirate song that we sort of entered into the world of Mr. Sam Burns. So that's our background story. That's how we came to be friends. And so thank you for being on the show.
Well, it was an incredible meeting, and good for you for just sending the email. One of the wonderful things about YouTube is sending these videos out there, and sometimes years later, the strangest little connections happen all over the globe. I mean, more than with any other platform, I found. And this is absolutely the best ever. It was just adorable. Immediately, I was, horribly struck by the responsibility of the whole situation. After all, a damsel in distress. You know,
right, and a 5-year-old one at that.
Yeah, well, exactly. I know. And we've got loads of kids. And so they've all had various, night terrors at various points. And it's so distressing. And you know what their little imagination, how real it all can be for them. And how, and there's so little you can say, but I can completely see how like one little trigger thing like this could somehow just really, really help for her. And as for the lullaby, it's kind of, as I was just texting or emailing you, it just fell into my head whole. It's only like 16 bars. It's a tiny little nursery rhyme. It's nothing. But funnily enough, it was my first. It is my first original composition for 26 years.
Oh my goodness! And yeah. Richard, your daughter, brought it out of him.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I've done loads of arranging for choir, so there's lots of composing in there somewhere. But nothing that actually just starts with a complete blank sheet. And it was literally, as I was just writing it, oh my God, this is all so cute and adorable. And it just, and so I sent them an email. And it's just like, hold on, I got a song. And just recording it straight away without even thinking. In fact, afterwards, I had to go back and look at the recording to remember what the words were. Because and it's very odd. It might well be the last song I ever write. I don't expect, it's not something on my list of things to do. But it was fascinating the way it just suddenly came out for, a child.
Isn't that funny where the inspiration comes from suddenly? I mean, it's like, Richard and I don't know if he told you this story, but how we met was through a casting of an audio drama for Santa Claus.
Nice.
And this guy is Santa Claus. He's Father Christmas.
I play Santa.
Beard is not white enough. You need a bit more white in there, mate.
I'm getting there. But
go on.
No, so Richard and I met through an audio drama, and then he was like in what, 2-3 scenes?
It wasn't very many.
That night. And I was like, man, there's something about this guy. So I went ahead and
I showered that night.
I messaged you, I believe. I said, hey, I want to get in contact with you later. And I was like, I think we should do a podcast together. And, me not ever doing one or like, being confident enough to do that, I was just like, all right. But it was weird that we just came together, and the world circles around itself. It always finds a way, through different tangents and pathways, and you're just kind of like, wow. But so that's, I'm so happy that you were able to do that for Roslyn, because she's a sweetie.
Well, to be honest, it's a long, complicated coronavirus story like everyone, but in brief, we're sort of stuck in this barn in Normandy waiting to see what happens. And we've been here kind of 6 months or so. And
oh, wow.
I'm not really expecting to get the choirs really back working for at least another year or two. But so that's okay. I mean, I'm here with the kids, spending time with the kids, and it's great. But musically, I'd completely stopped functioning, which is fine because I've kind of been a workaholic for 25 years, to be honest.
Right.
since my first child was born. And we've still got young kids now, even. We have five spread over the centuries. So
centuries. Okay.
It feels like it. It feels right? like it. Oh, so this did suddenly just spur me back into doing a bit of music. And much as I've been enjoying having a holiday from constantly having to create new arrangements and stuff, it was absolutely delightful to create this song. And now, the simple little melody, I then harmonized it again the same night. Yes. just for four-part male choir, as that's what was, that's how she originally meant it. And again, I just did that the same night and sent it off to the boys, who are all back in England, obviously all in isolation and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And they've got straight onto it. They're making one of those kind of Zoom video things, which should be ready in about a week's time, with about at least 12 gentlemen singing all four parts.
Right. Well, could you make sure you send that to both of us, please?
Of course, I will.
I would love to hear that.
It's great.
We will put it on our we have a new Facebook page that you can go and check out at any time. And yeah, boom. And so we will post that video there as well, with your permission, of course. So.
Of course, honored. The whole thing's been a massive honor. It's just, bless little Rosalind. We had a little chat on Zoom, and
it was so cute. You know, it's
so lovely to see her face. And oh my God, because my youngest is now 8. Well, my kids go like 25, 22, 20, 10, and 8 or something. So
that's kind of like my realm. You know, my oldest boy is 24, my youngest boy is 21, and then my girlfriend's kids are 12 and 10. So I'm right there with you in that mix, because you know, you're like, okay, we're done. No, we're not done. You know.
So much. I know. But what's crazy is I'm really missing the 5-year-old zone. And it's like, I've had at least one child, usually two, under the age of 10 for 25 years straight now. So, but the fact that, I know. But yeah, we have no more 5-year-old zone. So it was lovely to see Rosalind. It's just, it's such an age. What an age that is. It's just
well, they're
great.
Still sweet then.
Just wait.
I am not looking. I mean, I am looking forward to every moment, and I'm not in any kind of hurry for them. I'm going to treasure the wonderful moments, and I am kind of dreading the awful ones that are on their way.
Oh, they're coming.
I know. Oh my God. Sam, we have just a couple of questions here, if you don't mind. We want to ask you. I'm curious, you've had such a long career. Have you always been doing music?
No. I did music. Yeah, that was clear. I did music straight out of school. I had the luck to be in school with who is still my kind of best mate, long-time musical collaborator, who actually came and visited us last week, and who's an amazing musician who we still work with somehow, sometimes. And from there, we kind of joined this amazing band of very creative people, this crazy rock, dance, disco, punk bandy type thing, which kind of toured fairly constantly for sort of 5 years between the age of about 18 and 23.
Okay.
My age. And so, which is just, that's the best, you know, for that age, that's a wonderful thing to be doing. Just little clubs all over Europe and stuff, just constantly playing to just 100 or 200 people in tiny little sweat boxes with everyone dancing around madly. Brilliant. Absolutely wonderful.
You know, the size of the crowd, it doesn't matter. Just like the reaction makes it all worth it.
Smaller is better, honestly. Yeah, it's absolutely. Like we played Glastonbury once to like 10,000 people who were not there for us. They were mainly waiting for the band that was after us. But we had, yeah, of course. But I have played on big stages, and it's just nowhere near as much fun as being in a tiny club with like literally sweat dripping off the roof. It's just, at that age, I'm not so keen.
It's not something you want to do now. You're like, this is gross.
I want to go to bed. Yeah, it's
like, I do, people. But at that age, it was absolutely fantastic. And then at the ripe old age of 23, you know, I'd sort of decided, most of us decided, we were kind of ready to mainly retire to the countryside and make albums and grow vegetables and stuff like that. So, which is when we sort of came to Normandy, really. And but then, of course, then first kids started coming. And so it's quite hard to survive off music, because I barely even spoke French or anything. But so I started working as kind of building and landscape gardening, laboring, generally speaking. So I did like
survival jobs.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Very, very manly and basic and kind of, very rough hands for a long time. I did that about 7 years. And then I just started getting dragged into the local school of music. I can't remember exactly how it happened, just through connections in the village. And suddenly just got fully dragged in and ended up just doing all sorts of rock and world music and all sorts of different workshops. And I sang in the choir just to be a good, member of the village, because you've got to join in thing, keep stuff going in a village. And then the guy who'd been doing it for like 20 years decided it was time to hang up his baton. And he kind of spotted me as the only one in the choir who could really read music. So he sort of said, well, do you fancy taking it over? And I thought, you've got to be joking. Like, a choir leader, you're off your head, mate. So, but at the same time, never turned down a challenge. So I went home, I practiced. I kind of put on a little bit of Mozart's Ave Verum that we were thinking of doing with the choir. And I put the children's teddies on different armchairs and action men. So like, there's the altos, the alto action man was the alto. And so I practiced, right, got to give the sign to the altos now. And both arms went, oh no, I've got to keep this arm going like this. And I managed to single the altos without losing the beat. And it was so, and then, yeah, they gave me a try and the kind of village committee voted on, and they were, I think it was a hung thing because I walked quite scruffy shorts to the audition thing, but no one else could read music, so they gave me the job in the end. And to my astonishment, I realized I was good at it. I mean, I've had a lot of weird jobs, also antiques restoring and the gardening and the building, and I got by in all of them. It was fine, but choir leading just kind of jumped into my arms like a Labrador and licked my face, if you see what I mean. I had no idea. It came from nowhere, and then I started seeing other choir leaders working, and especially in the countryside, the standard is not very, very high, to be honest, if I'm fair. And just started thinking, why can't you see the help they need? Why aren't you helping them? And just suddenly rising, oh my God, not everyone sees that. That's weird. Right. And weirdest of all, then, because obviously you never listen to your mum and dad properly when you're an arrogant young sort of person.
No, which I feel not even was. A little bit.
And so all the fun stuff, it turns out I'm actually a third or fourth generation choir leader.
Are you serious? That is so funny.
And I had no idea until I became one.
It's like literally in your DNA.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. No, mum's amazing at it. I mean, she's a kind of nursery school a teacher, sort of head of nursery school, really early years stuff. And her granddad always did the village choir, and they did Gilbert and Sullivan, and he always sort of starred in them as well, that sort of thing.
Wow.
And his dad before, we've got stuff in the family where great granddad in his own writing had written out kind of four alto parts all in perf by hand, no photocopying even. So
oh my Lord.
Yeah, that's a thankless job right there.
Oh my God, yes. But so it was really quite extraordinary because I come from Bristol. Mm-hmm. The choirs are based in Bristol, and that's a very, very choral city. There are hundreds of choirs, and it's got quite a strong reputation for its mere 500,000 population to be very, very strong chorally. And I don't think I would ever have dared or thought or been offered the chance to become a choir leader there. Right. So ironically, had to move to rural Normandy for the fates or destiny to kind of suddenly chuck that in my path. And then strangely, because of family reasons, we had to move back to Bristol after sort of 15 years out here. And at that point, I expected to just be completely consumed as a tiny choir leading fish in a massive pond. And I suddenly found out that actually, even by the big city standards, I was still quite good at it. If I say awesome. So myself. But I know, which has surprised no one more than me. But it's the same thing. And we were quite desperate for cash because we were just moving back to the big city. Loads of kids had to kind of hit the ground running. And so within 9 months, we just kind of put loads and loads of posters up everywhere, slightly illegally, I must say, just sort of sellotape to lampposts and stuff. But we were desperate. And within 9 months, the choir grown to about 250 people. So
that's a big choir. I mean, that's a wall of sound just coming right at you. And like the tonality has to be spot on. So I would imagine you as a director, I mean, you would have to be pretty strict and like expecting of your choir. I mean, because that's like even if there's one tone off, it's going to throw the entire group off, correct?
Absolutely. And yes, to be honest, my reputation is for being absolutely ferocious, but always with a smile, always with a smile, but a most evil sense of cynical humor to put, you know.
That's what you need.
Hey,
absolutely, you need that.
Well, if they're not smiling, they go even flatter than they were going beforehand. Right. And
you're like, I'm gonna. There you go. Uh-huh.
Like, always, you know, we have certain little jokes. It's kind of, you know, come on, up. And people, you have to do better than this, or I'm going to start using the other finger.
In my world, I'm in the medical field. That means a different thing to me. So.
So Sam, I mean, you knew this about me. I'm also a music teacher, and I that's like my trade. This time, right now, in which we are living with COVID, I found myself being more of a counselor. I mean, I am not certified in any kind of way to do that, but these poor kids, they need this. I mean, people of all ages need this. It's just not the same if you don't have that element of connection. And that's one thing that music that we've all been a part of, including Dave. Dave's a trumpet player, and we've all experienced that. It's inexplicable to someone who does not understand that. But once they would have that in their life, I'm sure that they wouldn't be able to live their life without it. What do you think it's going to be like after COVID? Do you think we're going to see just like an uptick in people that really just want to get into fine arts and performing? I personally do not think it will be the way it was, but I am optimistic. What do you think?
Well, sadly, the big question is how we come out of COVID and whether the vaccines really work and whether new variants don't undermine that. I mean, particularly with choirs, obviously more than any other music making, typically choir people are standing shoulder to shoulder, taking deep in and out breaths for an hour in a quite packed out room. So the very last activity which will be formally recommended as being safe will be choir work. Of course, people are doing stuff like, you know, renting bigger rooms so people can be distant, singing in masks is not impossible. But it's a big issue. And so really, I hate to even say this because there's so much sadness out there, but the question is, coming out, what you know, actually getting back to normal, it's, you know, let's assume it will definitely happen at some point, but really, this can't put a timescale on it. But right, put that depressing aspect aside, I think.
Okay. First, I forgot.
Sorry.
I was like,
I'm sorry.
I'm just like
I had
digging to into this story. I'm like, okay, tell me more.
I know. Yeah, sorry, but hey. But what I also expect is basically, yeah, a massive musical love fest, yeah, as everyone just goes, sure, yay! It's like we can sing, we can hug, we can kind of ref together and make jam, and you know, or jamming and make jam. Both will be possible.
I like both of those things.
Exactly. What, you know, nothing not to like. And there will be huge. I think there'll be a massive backlog. I mean, my choir are just bereft, obviously. I mean, they're really, really bereft. They've all written me emails. I mean, literally over 100 of them have written me emails while they say, I'm crying as I type this.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
Yeah, I mean, choirs are particularly, I mean, I'm not saying anything about other forms of music making, but choirs are particularly kind of touchy-feely somehow, because you know, when you're using your voice, it's such a vulnerable situation. People are so vulnerable when they sing in front of others.
You are your own instrument. I mean, you have
that's it.
Sure, exactly.
The trumpet gives you kind of one level of protection between kind of your, if I may, your soul and the actual audience.
Oh, absolutely.
And any level. Whereas if you just stand there like by yourself, it's worse than the kind of accidentally forgot to put my clothes on naked in front of the whole school dream.
Right.
It's the same. I had a lady in my choir who's like, you know, a big, powerful feminist speaker who's been speaking to big conferences and, you know, arguing with for her whole career. And she says, so often I can stand up in front of 500 people and make some big thing and take loads of argument and feedback and no worries. But she volunteered just to sing a kind of 8-bar solo in the branch full of people who know her and love her, just at a rehearsal. And she bottled out 3 weeks in a row. And then she finally did it. Her voice shook. And afterwards, like 2 hours later, she was still trembling on a crazy adrenaline rush. I know. And she said, and this is brilliant. She nailed it. She said, the point is, when I'm out there in front of a chorus of 500, it's only my intellect. I'm just presenting my intellect, and people can argue with it, and I can argue back. And I'm singing those 8 bars. I'm kind of like rolling out my soul in front of everyone, and someone might tread on it or something. So, you know, that's a great way to put it, you know.
Yeah, well, performers by trade are kind of fragile anyway, because, you know, I've noticed from my past experience, when you get out there, you could practice at home and just nail it, you know, have it down. You step 1 foot on that stage or 1 foot on that venue, and you're just like, I think I just forgot everything that I've been practicing for the day.
What's my name?
Exactly. And you're like, will they like it? Are they not going to like it? Are my friends going to be here? It's just, you lose yourself in music. And that's the beauty of it. Of music is you can actually take yourself away. It occupies both sides of your brain, especially if you're playing or singing, or if you have an instrument in your hands and you're, you know, it just, because that's all you can think about, and that's the most important thing right then. But again, you have to get over that performance anxiety. Did you have any problem as that as a when you were younger, or?
When young, properly young, as in, you know, playing the cello sort of age 10 in the school performance and stuff, then yeah, that'd be sort of fairly scary. As a kind of rock and roll 18-year-old, no, youthful arrogance took care of all of that. It was not a problem in any way, because I was convinced I was awesome, even though I wasn't.
Yeah, and distortion takes care of mistakes, right?
yeah, absolutely. But it's quite so. But the most fascinating thing is doing the choir when we did some of the biggest concerts of my life, sort of thing. You know, we used to do the biggest hall in Bristol, which is just only a couple of thousand, but it used to get full. Oh, and it's still a big,
yeah, only.
Yeah. It's a big stage, and the choir's there filling the kind of 200 and whatever, 50 choir stalls. The audience is there filling the 1,000, and I have to kind of walk out into the middle. You know, that's always a moment. That is a moment, definitely. And, but I do my silly walks, actually, in the corridor just beyond the stage. I just kind of do a bit like, as you know, from Monty Python.
you cut me deep.
Ministry of Silly Walks, gentlemen.
Yes.
I refer you to, Ministry. So I'm there in the corridor doing that, because being a man, I can't multitask. So I can't do a silly walk.
Oh, absolutely not.
Right? I can't do a silly walk and panic at the same time. So as long as I'm doing the silly walk, the panic is fine. And then I walk out there, which is really mildly terrifying. But the great thing is, with the choir, there's like then 250 terrified people looking at me.
Yeah, and counting on you.
Yeah.
And where's the upbeat? Because here we go.
Exactly. That's it. And that just takes my fear right away, because the fear is basically egotistical, isn't it? It's like, you know, whatever. It doesn't really matter if I make an idiot myself. What counts is they're my people and they need me. Made me, my best work has been because of that, because it's allowed me to completely abstract from the ego stuff that any normal human being feels. And it's just a duty of care to get them through it. So I kind of turn, bow to the audience most elegantly, turn back to the choir, and sort of go. The audience can't see. And then the choir all giggles and smiles, and then I kind of bring them in, and that kind of usually works.
That's, you know, that little stuff is some of my favorite things to do with my groups that I lead, because it's an inside joke, and it's something that is special. It's a bond, and in the audience that they get to be a part of that moment, but they're not in on the joke. And I mean, I think that's cool. I think those little things are super cool.
Very much so.
That's the intimate inside, like you said, Richard, the inside thing that you and those particular group of people only get, because, you know how hard you've worked to get to that point, to your performance. You know how long it took. You know, like, you know, whomever may have lost a pad or a valve or something, you know, during that, during the practice, and you're like, okay, this is the part where that happened, you know, or this is the where you crack the entire time, but like this is your time to just throw your diaphragm in it and just go.
That's right.
But I've always found that very endearing and very comforting when like whoever my band instructor was or whomever the group leader was during a performance to just go like, okay, I'm feeling it. My whole chest is shaking, but for this 3-4 minutes or whatever it is, it's going to be great. And it's going to, like, it doesn't matter the outcome. Like, whoo, missed that one, but you know, at least the rest sounded good or, you know, something, nothing's a deal breaker in music.
Exactly.
It's all creative. It's all personal. It's all intimate. And you know, music's 80% of my life pretty much, you know, and either listening to it or trying to create it or trying to play it, if you will, because I'm on guitar as well, but not well, but but yeah, it's just really neat to have that connection with the music and the people that that you're involved with, and it's something you can't explain to somebody who's not musical, you know?
Exactly.
Because it occupies that much of your headspace.
And I wanted to kind of talk a bit. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No. I'm completely done. Go ahead.
And I wanted to talk a bit with you again, Sam, and also with you, Dave. Have you found that looking outside of your chosen profession of whatever that might be, other things help to strengthen it? Like, for example, this podcast is helping me to become a better music teacher just by having this conversation. Do you ever find that other things help to strengthen your abilities? Like
in the time when I was laboring, like I said, for sort of 7-10 years, pretty much doing almost no music at all. I miss music. I was sad to be away from it. Laboring's very tough. You don't get nearly as many compliments as you do as a musician, and certainly a choir leader. As a choir leader, oh my God, people worship you almost as a demigod. It's really quite unhealthy, but it's difficult not to. I have crazy stories. People come up and tell me they have a terminal illness and they've just been diagnosed, and that they have to go home and tell their family. And I'm like, you're the first person. I'm the first person you told.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. And many other people say, come up and saying, I couldn't talk about this 2 years ago when I joined the choir, but it was because it was after a bereavement, or, you know, and choir means so much to them. Of course, that's not me. That's choir. It's the nature of the thing. But you get all this as a labourer. All anyone wants, as a builder in particular, all anyone wants to know is, how soon can you start, and when will you be out of my life forever? Which is understandable. I've had builders too. That's what you want. It's normal. But the one thing, when I was a builder, that I did notice on the very rare occasion that I would sit down and just sing, quite often the blues, or some form of just spiritual wail, you know, because it was tough, not gonna lie. But there was something that I didn't have before came. My technique was worse, everything was generally worse, but when you're a kind of very obsessed 23-year-old, 24-year-old musician, you don't really know anything else except struggling to practice your instrument and sort of get on with stuff. And there I was kind of, you know, building, mixing concrete before the sun rose by the lights of a van in hail and stuff. And shocker.
That sounds like a song in and of itself.
Yeah, that actually made me sing the blues better. Shocker. What a surprise.
That's amazing. Wow. You know, it's just there's things in life that make you better at everything. I think music gives you an understanding and organization, and that's, you know, I guess working in the job that I work in the operating room, I have to be very organized and ready for the next step that the doctor's doing. But it's almost like a song, you know, once you start a song, you can't stop it necessarily, you know. Your performance has to be spot on and your stuff has to be ready. So I think that, you know, that mindset, that train of thought, it always, everything's like, and I'm not just saying it's just my job in particular, it's anybody's job, because there's a start and a finish to every day. You follow a certain routine, you follow a certain order of things, and it gets you through to your day. It's like a song, basically. You know, it's like I said, music is 80% of my life, because, you know, there's a starting and an ending, and some parts are slow, some parts are fast, some parts are quiet, some parts are loud, and then it's the dynamics of life, and that's what I relate music to. So any part of the more life you can live, the better your music's going to be, for sure. So that's how my life correlates with music.
This is a very deep show today all of a sudden, isn't it?
Damn. It certainly is, Rick.
My goodness.
Well, it's 8:30 in the morning in my time. I haven't been up that long, so.
Yeah, and it's 11:30 here. And what time is it where you are, Sam?
We're like 5:40, just heading towards tea time. Yeah,
three different time zones. It's amazing.
Wow. Amazing.
Well,
spanning the globe from the closet.
That's right. Sam, could you tell us anything about where we might be able to find the choir? Just go to YouTube, and what do we look up? Do you have an official channel or anything like that?
Well, yeah, there's the two choirs. There's Bristol Man Chorus, which is just spelled like how it sounds, easy peasy. And then there's Gert Lush Choir, which is the mixed voice choir. Excuse me. So Gert Lush is a Bristol vernacular. Well, Gert just means sort of big or very, as in look at that Gert sandwich, or he's a Gert lad, isn't he? I don't know. So Gert, so just big or very, Gert Lush Choir, and just Gert Lush is just something that's excellent, you know, generally speaking. So, you know, slightly arrogant name there, but
it's lush, Gert Lush.
See, look at that, Gert Lush, my brother. That's what you say in Bristol, Gert Lush, my brother. So, that's spelled GURT LUSH, Gert Lush Choir. And so that's the mixed voice choir. And there's zillions of clips from concerts over the years, and Man Chorus, and some tunes where both choirs combine, and so on.
I got to tell you, I'm sitting here looking at your website for the Bristol Man Chorus, and just underneath the welcome, it's amazing. And you can see your personality popping through. I mean, because, like, obviously you're full of life, full of personality, and I just love it. It says, "The mighty male voice classics from the valleys of the land of the dragon, insane Georgian Bulgarian repertoire to make very stones weep. Vintage cheese from the barbershop tradition, tempered with a small pinch of salt. Also anthems concerning the wonders of facial hair, garden sheds reversing round corners." I mean, just your explanation of it, and in and that of itself, I mean, I love it. And then at the very bottom, after another blurb there, it says, "P.S. It's not for girls."
Well, you know, it was there's quite a tradition. We're not the inventor of this kind of man choir genre, and I like, men need it. Men are so much shyer about singing than women, and they're
absolutely
terrified. Yes. Absolutely, I'm just by a thousandfold, and you know, it's like it's men need it so much, and it's absolutely delightful, because they are all man-childs. Every one of them are men-children. And my big group of men, who are all just so much more insecure than my rowdy and slightly bawdy altos and sopranos, who are just very funny, very confident and quite lewd at times, whereas the blokes are all a little bit slightly more up. They didn't joke. They didn't laugh at my kind of vaguely inappropriate jokes in the way that all the ladies did for a couple of years, until they realized it was probably a safe space sort of thing. And and what's really funny about the blokes is what they really like most is singing deeply, deeply sad, massively sentimental songs about how sad it is when they get sent off to war from the point of a woman, which is a great tradition. If you see what I mean, I know, it's analyze that, but it's kind of like, it's like, how sad
I can.
He's going to leave me. You know, Johnny has gone for a soldier. Absolutely fantastic. So, and they love singing this really, really soppy stuff. Quite often about how sad it is to be a bloke.
That's
it's terribly sweet.
Well, you have done a great service for a little girl across the pond, and hopefully for our listeners as well. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sam Burns again. Look him up on YouTube. Look him up on Facebook. And give them some love. Thank
Sam,
you.
Sam, I'm
going to
be cyber stalking you for the rest of the day, because I really
That's
just
absolutely see you. Great. Please, knock yourself out. Have fun. Right. It's been lovely to talk to you. Good
Thanks
night,
so much,
America.
Have a great
Take
day.
Care, guys.
Thanks
Thank
so much.
You.
From the Closet is written, produced, recorded, and edited by Dave Moxley and me, Rick Kane. Special thanks to the star of our show today, Sam Burns, for not only being the star of our show today, but also for being a wonderful person. And by the way, that's his choir you're hearing right now. If you like what you hear, make sure you subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube. Just type in David Moxley from the Closet, and there we will be. We also now have a Facebook page, and thank you to our new followers. Just type in From the Closet, a podcast from closets. I know, kind of obvious. So until next time, we'll see you then.